Hey guys, it's GVB Mind Warrior here, here with dear mate of mine, Trevor Borkham. We're going to have a bit of a chat about Trev's history, backstory, and find out how he gets through all these days and how he improves his mental health and works towards stuff. So Trev, good to see you, brother.
Good to see you, mate.
So take us back. I want to, you know, you were a flight leader.
That was it. So I was the guy responsible for getting us from start point to the end point and then back. And so we took off one night with some Aussie Special Operations guys, and we fly nice and high because we try to avoid detection. Really, it's a fly high, you can hear it for miles. You fly low, can't hear it so much. So we gave the order to come down low, down to low level, and I came inside, checked the map, and woke up in Germany. And it.
So what happened? What happened in the crash? Because they went down pretty hard, and
So we're flying 100 knots, getting close to the target, and I find out after the fact that we hit the ground with a 1,700 foot per minute rate of descent. So I mean, you think about how fast it's coming down, and 100 knots of forward speed, and so the aircraft got tumbled a few times. So I was unconscious. I don't know if I remember a couple minutes before we hit, and that's about it. Woke up once. I can only assume in the hospital, you know, woke up gagging on something and couldn't move my hands to clear it. Couldn't open my eyes. And a lot of things, surgery, you know, eyes taped shut, strapped down. And so so I remember that. And then I remember waking up in Germany and very, very pretty nurse. Very, very pretty lady. You know.
He never changes.
No. She said, hey, I'm Warren, and you know, you're in Lawrence Stoll Regional Medical Center, and you're in a helicopter crash, and you're paralyzed from the waist down. And it's, I remember being kind of like, okay, whatever, because I think I was pretty doped up. And so didn't really, ran really give a shit at that point. It's kind of, that just didn't make sense. But I was fortunate. I had one of my wife's good friends, one of my good friends, her husband was stationed in Germany at the time. And so I woke up and she was right there in the room with me. And then a couple of days, you know, within a day, I was there, I think, 5-6 days maybe. I don't know. The days kind of run in, you know. But at some point, one of my best friends from growing up, you know, grew up across the street from me, pokes his head in. Says, fuck, what are you doing here in Germany? Yeah. You know, what are you doing here? And it turned out he was there doing research in Switzerland. But, you know, that helped me out a little bit. And at that same time, I'm hearing about, we've got some guys that are critical here. You know, we got three guys dead. Oh, another one just talking about four guys dead, you know. And still kind of in and out of it at that point, though. And then I made the transfer. They transferred me to Walter Reed. Yeah. And
so what did it feel? I mean, as you're going through this, when did it start playing in your head that you were, stuff was getting pretty real?
Probably when I got to Walter Reed. I went because nothing hurt. I didn't have any pain at all. And you know, to the point where, you know, they said, well, you've got to use your morphine button. I'm not hurting. I don't need the drug. But we're going to put it on automatic then. Well, crash out then, whatever. So they put me on the automatic drip. And so I just don't remember giving a shit much until I got to Walter Reed. And then it started kind of setting in a little bit what it meant. I think it really hit when I saw the kids and the wife of the kids for the first time. It was the day after what day after I got to Walter Reed, you know, and wife came at first, you know, and it was cool. And then I'll take you back real quickly, you know, the day we left for this deployment, you know, the deployment ceremonies they're just fucking depressing because everybody, you know, you got people that have been through this a dozen times and like, oh, fuck, whatever. Yeah. And you got people that have never done it and they're like, oh my God, everybody's crying. And then you've got the kids in the middle that are kind of wishy-washy. So my family never wanted to go. They just said, I didn't want them there and they didn't want to come. So I had the boss come pick me up, you know, my platoon leader. And platoon leader comes pick me up. I'd spent that whole morning out in the backyard with the kids, you know, we're kicking a soccer ball around, playing ball, you know. Gets towards time, hey guys, dad's gotta go grab a quick shower, get dressed, you know, come back out and play ball a little more. Boss picks me up, we take off down the road, flip a U-turn, come back by, and my youngest one, Owen's come running down the steps screaming, no, dad, don't go, crying. And that that fucking hurts. And then, because he's a stud, ball player right now. Anyway, mate. And yeah, that was our thing. Every day, rain or shine, every day we were playing ball in the house. Yeah. I mean, broke picture frames, you know, playing ball in the house every day. And so anyway, back to Walter Reed, you know, my wife comes in, and then Owen comes around the corner crying, and he was six at the time. First thing is, now you can't play soccer with me anymore.
Yeah.
And that's where it fucking hit. Yeah. And that was like getting kicked in the nuts. I mean, that took everything out of me. And and my daughter Blake, you know, we used to dance all the time. And, you know, always dancing, playing around. You know, and that's, you know, there's no more dancing with Dad. Cause Dad's sitting in the chair, and it just doesn't fucking work. Yeah, you know, and so they stuck around a week, and I told Joe, take them home, because, you know, Walter Reed, it's not a place for kids.
We don't want kids, man.
Yeah, you don't want kids seeing that shit every day, and I mean, that just, because it's, you know, you think all the wartime injuries, you don't want kids seeing that shit every day, it's just not right, and they get bored for a bit. You know, they saw dad was alive, dad's okay, so after a day or two, you know, okay, you know, dad's all right, and this place sucks, it's really boring. And so I sent mom and the kids home, and so then it was, once they left, that really got rough. You know, I got real lonely, real fucking fast. You know, I was in my own room by myself, which was nice, but that was the first time it really hit me. I mean, a couple of nights there, I cried myself to sleep, and it's like, dude, what the fuck am I going to do?
And it's a reality check, isn't it?
It's a big time reality check. And then a fellow I was telling me about earlier, you know, the Sergeant Major, just heard this voice, and there's no fucking way he's here. Chris? And he pokes his head, and he says, what the fuck are you doing here? Crash the helicopter, man. What are you doing? And he was here checking on those guys, you know?
Yep.
How you going, Steve? Good. But, you know, so he and I talked a little bit, and it was just the familiar face, kind of helped with the hospital scene.
Oh yeah, man! Some amazing what a difference someone.
It's,
and that's a mental health thing, man. We talk, you know, about when you feel it going through it, you're going alone. But when you feel you've got someone with you, it's sort of
a little bit of help.
Yeah.
You know, and then we had a couple of crew chiefs from my unit that had changed duty station. They were over there, and so one of them, Colby Rasband, he came into our room. You know, he comes in almost every day, and we're talking about it, and. And he kind of helped me put it in perspective, you know. He goes, you know, you're sitting up front of this 53-foot-long Blackhawk, you know. So, you know, you're 5 feet from the front of this thing. You know, you can't see the other 45 feet behind you. And he goes, so, you know, when you're coming into land here and there, when we say go around, you don't realize how close that tail rotor was to the trees and all of us are going in. And that kind of puts a little bit, you know, kind of helped put a little bit on me because shit happens fast. And it helped out a little bit, but you always come back to, you know, I was the pilot in command, and so I'm responsible for everything that did or didn't happen.
And, Especially because guys didn't make it back.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we lost four damn good men, and then there's a bunch of other guys that are lives completely altered, and, you know, and they'll never be, you know, I mean, Gary Robinson's a triathlete, I mean, but now he competes in Invictus, but, you know, I used to love to freaking run. I see people running now, it's like, fuck, I want to run. Mm. You know, and I know he's the same way. He's gotten an Invictus, and from what I understand, something a lot. And, you know, thank the Prince for that, for setting that up.
Because,
I mean, it,
you know, it's a huge thing.
It's getting in groups like that, you know,
we talk about people who walk the path.
Yeah.
So if somebody's been through the same sort of stuff and dealt with it and had to go through it, and you suddenly you with other people can understand
it's
you.
Not somebody that went to school, it's somebody that's actually lived here and done this and dealt with it and actually knows the lows.
So let me go to this. So you're in the guts, but you now worked out that shit's real.
Yeah.
You're not walking anymore, all that sort of stuff. You can't play soccer with the kids, all those things. Now, what do they do to you?
Yeah, well, I spent a couple nights crying myself to sleep, and then I was sitting there one day. I mean, you know, and I had family coming back, you know, a couple of days later. But I'm sitting there one day, and there's a fellow there, no arms, no legs, and his girlfriend's pushing him around through the hospital in a wheelchair. And I was sitting there, not quite as bad off as that fella. And then I had my own room, and it was a small room, it was skinny, it was narrow, but it was my own room, so I had my own privacy. But directly across the hall, you know, directly across the way, there was a fella, and he had a brain injury. And, you know, and I'm watching his wife having a spoon feed him. And I said, well, shit, you know. I could be a lot worse off than I am, son.
It's amazing. You know, yeah, that's doing the thing. Okay. You hear people complaining about, oh, yeah. You know, this and the weather's cold. So, yeah. Hang on. You got arms, you got legs, you can walk, you can eat, you can do everything you have, you know.
It gave me perspective. I mean, that's, you know, this sucks, I can't, you know.
But that's better than nothing.
Yeah, yeah. This sucks, but I could be up here.
Yeah,
you know, I could be laying in bed with nothing to do but look at the wall.
Man. Jeffrey Matthews. Yeah, he used to shoot with us. You know, Jeff went off a friggin' roofer. Went off the roof.
Yeah,
2 years ago. He necked from the neck down.
Yeah,
and it's changed his whole life dramatically. You know,
and it's I think that realization kind of helped me.
Yep.
And
you got great kids. You got a great wife. Jilly,
yeah.
If you're out there.
Yeah,
fantastic. Trev's got a fantastic family, wonderful kids, wonderful wife.
It's,
puts up with his laziness.
Well, they do, and they, you know, really this whole thing, you look at who suffers, and yeah, I'm paralyzed from the waist down, but the other ones had to pick up all the slack.
Yeah.
All the shit I used to do, mowing the lawn, taking out the trash, all that stuff, now they've got to do it, you know. I used to go out, now garage is the thing, when I'm cleaning the garage. Now I've got garages to clean. Hey, guys. Get out here and up here, you know, I've changed a bit, you know, my patience isn't there.
Yeah.
You know, and it's because again, you know, you go through, you know, I went 30 years of my life. I need to do this, so I'm going to do this. I'm going to this year. Now I'm sitting, I've got to direct this. No, I don't want that there. I don't want that here. And it just,
Now,
I got a face for radio, though. No.
That's right. You're getting an ass like a truck driver now, too. Eat too many desserts over here. Now, the other thing is, you went through a period now, I've known you for a while now, but you went through a period where you were drinking a lot.
Yeah.
And I knew it was a crutch for you. And
yeah.
I got worried about you a few years ago because I knew that you were struggling with it and you were down in a whole lot of... What were you drinking?
No, good God, I was drinking everything. Yeah. Mostly bourbon, but I at one point was going through about 2 liters of booze every 3 days, and that, I mean, I got enough money where that's not a problem financially, but even though I like the good shit, but it's the example for the kids, it's the health. I want to be here. I want to live. I want to come out here and share the cup with you for another 30 years, you know. And I was looking at that path I was going down to, and you know, you look at some of the time, you know, all the times you don't remember because you're putting 10 sheets to the wind instead of 3, you know. And so I needed to make a change, and so I've cut back, and we've been out here all week, you know, and I've had a couple of drinks with but nothing with, you know, Trev being at the bar at 2 o'clock in the morning, nobody else there, you know, taking a roadie, you know, back to the room.
But it's been great. And so just on a mental front, so you know, thinking about your journey back from this, what did the shooting sport do for you?
The shooting sports was...
Because this is something that gets a lot of bad press. You know yourself. I shoot. Yeah. Everyone who knows me knows I make movies, all that sort of stuff, but I also shoot guns, which is a rare thing for Hollywood to have anyone that actually shoots for real. And because I do it, it makes me different. And people always judge shooters in a really bad light. And we don't... Yeah, you know, at home, we get the nail for it.
Guns.
Yeah, guns. Yeah. And so... What I've seen it do for a lot of people is miraculous stuff. And so what did it do for you?
The whole thing for me, just getting into the group, it's just kind of like you said, coming back after 4 years, you haven't picked up a gun in how long?
3.5 years.
You come out here for the people. It's a family.
Yeah. We fly across the world to America to compete in the world titles, and then knowing you weren't going to win, but it came back for the company of the people and the friendship you made.
I
mean,
I come out here and I shoot like garbage, but I don't know. Damn, because I get to see you. I get to see all the other Aussie mates. I get to see my Germans. You know, I get to see everybody. And it's a true family environment. And not everybody calls all the time, but I know if I do need to talk to somebody, I've got military friends I can call, and I've got shooting friends I can call anywhere. And it's guys I can call at the drop of a hat, and boom, they're right there.
Yeah.
I mean, we moved in 2016, and, Jill and I were separate. Just she moved out. We were trying to sell the house in Tennessee by ourselves, and the housing market there is shit. I mean, there's like 1,600 houses on the market at the same time as ours.
Wow.
And you know, trying to sell it, didn't want to pay two. And that got kind of stressful. And she said, "Look, I need you here." And she wasn't able. And so I picked up the phone and called called two of my best mates and fucking dropped everything and flew right out. Yeah. I mean, flew out from Seattle to Tennessee, drove a freaking U-Haul truck for me and moved us and, nice. And got us in. And then stayed 3 or 4 extra days and banged out the bathroom so I could get into it. We bought this house. I couldn't even get in the bathroom.
Yeah.
So I stayed in the hotel the first 2 nights while my friends,
friends
at home, and they busted it all out and knocked the doorway so I could get in.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's friends and, you know, people.
It's a massive community, and I mean that's the biggest thing with anything mental health wise. It doesn't have to be shooting; just friends and people you can call on, and a network of people that aren't going to judge you.
Yeah,
it's the hardest thing I think with anyone struggling from what we call illness above the neck.
Yeah,
it's worrying what people are going to think of you.
Yeah,
you got to find that group of friends and group of people that aren't going to judge you.
No, people always worry about it, and the shooting sports get. I work with HAVA a lot. HAVA is a charity called Honored American Veterans of Field, and. And so we do veterans, and we do veteran family days. So the whole family comes out, 12 and up gets to shoot. Kids that are below 12, excess sights comes out, and they set up an airsoft range for them.
Nice.
They teach them gun safety, and then they take the kids to the little shoot house with the airsoft gun stuff. We got bouncy houses and everything. We got sitters for it's a stress free day for everybody. But some of the stuff I've seen out of there, we had 3 or 4 years ago, we had 4 guys, and this is all the shooting industry. I mean, we get. Smith & Wesson, Ruger, I mean, all these guys, they all kick in. 3 or 4 years ago at the event I run in Kentucky, we had 4 guys. Last time they saw each other was when they got hit by an IED.
Wow.
They got hit, and everybody's out, evacuated, different points, different parts. Hadn't seen each other in 3 years. Yeah. And they bump into each other there. And,
wow.
And that's, that was a revelation. That was like, wow, we just did this.
Yeah.
You know, these guys linked up. You know, we... that's what the shooting industry does, man.
That's pretty amazing. They
reach out. We had another guy that had ALS. And at the point that they reached out to me, he couldn't talk. He wanted to shoot one more hunt with his brothers. So we put him up. We managed to get him a friggin' 8-point buck. But that helps his health. And I mean, poor bastard died 2 years. I mean, ALS.
Yes.
I mean, there's no winning it. But, turning that around. But, it's all about the mental health. I mean,
do you have anything you do now that each day or that keeps you going forward? Or is it, like, what do you do in your lifestyle to keep you going? Because...
I get frustrated sometimes, but it's, I love my family, I love my friends, and that's what keeps me going. It's, I want to get to the next day because I want to see everybody. I want to come out here 30 years from now and still be hanging out with
you. You
can bring a walker and I'll bring my wheelchair and we can make it happen, But,
because, I mean, for me, I've been, like yourself, been lucky enough to see all the perspectives of life from being shut down pretty badly as a kid to going to achieving a lot, to losing a lot, to then, getting it back and then 2016, dying of a stroke, getting ready to climb Everest, which a lot of people don't know about. But then the appreciation factor of that and what mattered most. And, I think back to so many people now, especially, they've spent all this friggin' life chasing after these awards and this and that. You know what? None of it matters. The minute I got hit with that stroke and I was on the verge, wasn't being here, the only thing, not one of those things ever came to my mind. The only thing that mattered was when my wife and kids came to the hospital door and I went, that's what I'm here for.
Yep.
Exactly. That put it all in perspective. So I come here and now and I enjoy and shoot it up and have fun.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, you always like to shoot better. But at the same time, it's in perspective where it matters in the big tree of things. Yeah, life,
you get the family. And some people don't have the family. And
you've got to make a family, which is...
Yeah, maybe that's your friends. And that's... And people... there's some people you just can't help. But most of them you can.
Mm.
And there's...
people, they don't take their life because they want to. They take their life because they don't think there's any hope left for living.
Yeah, you hear the statistic here, 22 a day, veterans commit suicide. And I read an article, a very long article, kind of talking about that study. And they were talking about some of the people that don't get counted.
Of course.
That got missed. And so one of them was a guy, and he's in Iraq. And just went to offer a water bottle to this little Iraqi girl. And the girl took a couple of steps, and she stepped on an IED, killed her. And had he not held that water bottle out, in his mind, she'd still be alive. and they tell a story, and then they saw all the mental health guys, and they loaded them up like our VA does. They loaded them up with a bunch of pills and stuff, but nothing was able to change his belief on that, you know. And it,
but I mean, sometimes this is where, you know, we talked about it before, where there's someone who's experienced it and gone down that path, sometimes has the ability to get through. Because someone can go, you know what, you kind of get me, and I understand that you get me, and I'll talk to you and I'll get help through you. And so you become, the people with lived experience become the conduit for help for someone who's, because I think there's a great deal of services out there, but they're missing an important fact, which is people that have trodden that path. Yeah. And then someone like yourself is now in a chair and you know, trying to get the use of their legs back, which I love the fact that Trevor never gives up on trying to get to walk again. But you've got that piece between where someone who's lost a limb or been injured, they can talk to you about it and look to you and go, actually, no, there's a way out of this.
Yeah.
It's not taking your life.
Yep. Another shooting story. Another shooting help. Again, through HAVA. We did one of our family days, and one of the ladies that runs this one just bumped into a guy at the grocery store, had service dog, and he just, you look, that's a veteran. She said, hey, we've got this family day. You should come out and try it. We've got guns on it. And he comes out and shoots. Has a good time. And they made some connections, and he ended up getting a job in the industry. And we didn't find out until talking, you know, a couple of years later. He was, it's not week to week, day to day. He was hour to hour. You know, maybe I should go home and pop myself and just end this. And now he's married, and he's got a beautiful baby boy. Got him in the shooting community, and he met the right people that, plenty of people that care.
There are. And I mean, you know, the more I come back to places like the Cup, and, you know, the more people you meet that have trodden a lot of different paths, that have been through a lot of stuff, who are always more than willing to help people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Been so good about it, you know.
Yeah, and that's, go back to my drinking, you know. I've had people talk to me and say, brother, really, you gotta kind of wind down a little bit, and I finally realized in my head, you know, you really do need to do this, and, you know, making the strides.
Yeah. And it's good. It's good to see.
It is.
Looking really well, and it's been good to catch up. We haven't seen each other in 4 years now. Last time I saw Trev was in opposite the Opera House in Sydney. He was out there. If anyone goes to Canberra to the War Memorial, you go down to the Afghanistan War section, the Iraq War. There's a whole section down there in the War Memorial now. And there's the cowl of the helicopter that Trevor was saved on and taken out on. That's down there, and it's quite an amazing, powerful place. If you ever get down to that place to go see the memorial, and it's well worth the trip.
And very, very powerful. And that was my litter. Mm. And I found that out when we got to see it. There's two guys were in the aircraft, obviously. So I got to talk to the guy that pulled me out, you know, pulled me out of the helicopter, and the medic that was working on me, you know, told me I punched him in the nose, and he was trying to put the tube in my nose for the airway, and it was pretty powerful talking, like I was talking the other night. Unfortunately, one of the guys that carried me out of there wasn't able to handle what he'd seen that night through all the mental health professionals, you know, taking his own life.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a big thing. Like, we just annually in America, you lose about 22,500 people to suicide. Australia, we lost about 3,320 odd last year, and it's massive. And it's just by a simple thing, and I say to people, just care. It's really simple, just to care for seconds. You just have to notice that someone's traveling through something bad, and, you know, notice the change in your friends if they've been sad and upset, and suddenly they're happy, or they're giving their things away, or there's little signs to look for to know that someone's having a hard time. And if you think someone's struggling, especially someone you care about as a friend, don't just palm them off and go, they'll be okay, they're having a rough day. Ask them, say, are you okay? Do you need help? Can I do something for you? You know, just keep finding, you'll find out the answer. And it doesn't take a lot, but it gives a lot, because those small words can make a huge life-saving difference, you know.
So I've also found this is, don't even beat around the bush with it either. I've had a couple of friends that straight up, you all right? Are you thinking about killing yourself? I mean, seriously, what's going on? And I had one friend, yeah, actually I am. And, well, why? Let's talk about it.
Yep.
What's going on? And, you know, found out he'd come home, wife was gone, took the kid, left him all the bills, and I hadn't paid anything. He didn't, you know, what do you do? And, well, you still got a kid out there. You might not see that kid every day like you deserve to, but the kid's still going to need somebody to call and talk to, you know,
And then nothing messes up a life forever more than going, I mean, I've been through 11 suicides, and there's nothing messes up someone more than going through seeing, IDing. If you get, we got dragged through coroner's courts before, we've been through lots of stuff. Yeah. You see enough of that, you go, you know, I hate the fact that we're, you know, living yourself is going to be lived experience bigger, because you wish no one had ever had to go through and become one. You know, my love it would be if no one had ever become a lived experience speaker, because we'd have to go through the shit journey that we've been through.
Absolutely.
You know, but here we are, and that's what we're going to do. And it's, you know, step by step, we help them change people and make them see that there's a pathway back. You know, Trev's an extraordinary guy. I've been fortunate enough to call him a friend for a long time. And, you know, he's come back through a lot of stuff, and he's doing really well. He's got a, you know, as I said, wonderful wife and family, and, you know, he shoots guns, you know, really badly.
Really badly. Terrible.
I have to fire off him this weekend. And we have a great time together. We have a great time at the Cup with all the shooting teams that come out here from all around the world. And, you know, it's a family. So if you're struggling, you feel alone, there's people out there, and you've got to realize everyone's going through stuff, or everyone's been through stuff, or everyone's coming back from stuff, and you're never actually alone. So if you reach your hand out and want to help, you know, if you need help, reach your hand out as well. And someone will be there to help you.
And just try being a little polite once in a while. You never know. That thank you might be the face. Hey, you know what? Maybe serve them coffee or whatever. Maybe I don't need to offer.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Trevor, thank you, brother. Hey. Thank you.
Always.
Give your eye for Trevor Borkum. He's on the Ruger shooting team now. Awesome stuff. And you'll see him shooting 3-gun on the coolest wheelchair you've ever seen in your life. It's like a mini tank. And, I want to go in it one day.
You know what? You get down to Dallas, I'll give you a ride.
Sounds like a plan.
My lap's always open.
We're done. Thanks, guys.